Welcome to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area. Your hosts for today are Susan Franson and Gina McAndrews. Welcome to both of you.
And we're happy to be together again in our Zoom studio. Gina, you just returned from helping out your parents on their farm in Colorado, just in time for a record Iowa snowfall. But at least we didn't have to come into the studio this morning. Thanks to you, Mike Murphy, for driving in from a farm just north of Ames to get us on the air. Today, we'll be continuing our series on bills at the Iowa legislature with a special feature of a lobby day. With the legislature starting, we'll be bringing in a couple of journalists to provide their perspective on the legislation being considered this year. On Monday, we heard what our legislators Jesse Green, Herman Kornbach, and Beth Wessel-Crochelle at the Ames League of Women Voters Legislative Wake-Up about the death penalty, the bottle bill, and how land use affects watersheds. Appropriately for Black History Month, Betty Andrews will be telling us about the concerns of the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP. Later, we'll hear from Laura Bellin explaining amendments of abortion and gun laws.
You told me that Betty Andrews was going to have an important spot every month now.
Yes, and with that announcement, we have a resounding welcome for Betty Andrews. Hi, Betty. Hey,
Susan and Gina, thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here to talk about some of the measures that the NAACP is looking to see during the legislation session. I might point out that, yes, we're stepping into Black History Month, and I'm really excited about that. I do a huge festival, I'll Make Me a World in Iowa, that is scheduled for February 26th and 27th, so at the end of the month, and that will be virtually. And so everyone is certainly welcome to join us for that festival. We're at worldiniowa.org. You can also find us on Facebook, I'll Make Me a World in Iowa, Iowa's African American Festival. Let me just say, though, that our NAACP initiatives are not necessarily in honor of Black History Month. It is to in the hope that Black Americans and people of color can have a great well-being all year round. So I wanted to first just kind of talk about some of the big news in terms of what's coming out of the legislature. And that would include the bill that is proposed about vouchers and charter schools. And there has been a proposal in both houses of the legislature on this bill. And simply put, it is bad legislation. It is something that would walk us back. I believe Senate file now it's Senate file 159. Formerly, you may have heard it as SSB 1065. But anyway, that is a piece of legislation that is opening the doors for people to open enroll and to establish charter schools within districts, but then allow those charter schools to opt out of the voluntary diversity plans and desegregation plans of the schools. For us with the NAACP, understanding our history, being the organization that argued the landmark case of Brown versus the Board of Education, which served to desegregate schools, we feel that this is building an opportunity and also financing an opportunity to resegregate schools. This bill allows funds to be taken out of public school if a student decides to move to another school. And that is problematic when you're thinking about that move to a charter school, which often are private schools, and they have less accountability specifically when it comes to diversity. And this bill is actually proving that, because they're asking that these schools not have to be responsible to the school board of that area. So that's problematic for us. And it's something that we are definitely adamantly pushing for people to vote no on. It's a step in the wrong direction, as I mentioned, Brown versus the Board of Education, but also in our state, even 86 years before that, we had Clark versus the Muscatine School District. And that was, the ruling was for allowing the Clark children to attend public schools, as it should be. So that's one big thing for us. And of course, one of the other things that has been on our agenda for several years has been anti-racial profiling legislation, as well as unbiased policing. And over the past year, I have been a part of the governor's focus committee on criminal justice reform. And that committee has studied racial profiling and studied measures around the country on racial profiling and came back with solid recommendations on unbiased policing and racial profiling. And so we are interested very much in having a statutory ban on racial profiling. So making sure that it is clear that racial profiling is against the law, not just racial profiling, but unbiased policing. So any type of biased policing would be prohibited by this law. But then also it would create an opportunity to study the data. One of the things that is of concern is that Iowa, with we spent like 20 years at the top in this nation for the overrepresentation of African Americans in the criminal justice system. So, and one of the feeders to that has to do with traffic stops. And so this bill will take a look at how often and who is stopped and some of the reasons behind the stop. And that's important because the ACLU a few years ago came out with a study that showed that African Americans were stopped significantly more. And also when it related to drugs, which some of the stops were about, that though African Americans and other Americans, I mean, and people of color don't use drugs at any higher rate than white Americans, their arrests were significantly more. So that's problematic. There's also this piece after the stop where African Americans are searched a lot more. Their vehicles are searched, but actually those searches turn up comparatively less because they're overdone. So anti-racial profiling is one. One other thing I wanted to mention too is that the death penalty has been a topic this year. And because of our disparate rate, we are still number three in the nation for over-incarcerating African Americans in particular, and then people of color as well. So with statistics that high, and we're finding also that there are a number of challenges in terms of making sure that sentencing and the process is accurate. And that's part of the work of the NAACP. So we don't want to risk innocent people being put to death. We also believe very strongly that it's inhumane. So that's one of the things, too, that we wanted to make sure that we emphasize. A couple of others during my time, we are looking at fair chance employment. We have been working on this also for a number of years, but essentially offering the opportunity or making the opportunity available for people once they have done their time in prison or even on probation, that they have a fair opportunity to seek employment. It doesn't ban a background check, but what it does is it moves that background check until either the time of the interview or the time that the offer is made. This gives people a chance to have a conversation and see if it's a fit, and then make a decision based on there. What we have found is that by people having on the application a question about criminal background, that there are several people, and sometimes it's people that may have had a crime, and often I should say it's the, that happened when they were younger, like 20 years ago, 7 years ago, that kind of thing. And when they apply 20 years later, they're still, that is following them like a scarlet letter. So we want to make sure that we open up doors for people like this, because studies show that after so many years, someone who has been to prison is no more likely to commit a crime than someone who has never been. So that's definitely a concern for us. The other area that we are looking at for this session, and amongst other things, but a priority area, is that we are looking to continue our work. We've been working with the Iowa Supreme Court Chief Justice and the State Court Administrator's Office for a number of years. And we are looking, one of the things we're looking at is making sure that juries are fair and balanced. And when we think about that, there is often a challenge when suspects of color or people who are being tried of color have to face all white juries who may not understand their plight. And so we are pushing for legislation that would open the way for ensuring that Iowa's juries are as diversified as they can be. And that would include encouraging people to do jury duty, but also making sure that we are reaching and provide using the proper list to send out the notices to. So those are a few of our legislative agenda items with the NAACP. Obviously, as things arise on the Hill, we will be there to talk about them and give perspective from not only the vantage point of people from color, but also the vantage point of being America's conscious and helping them think through this. We're very pleased with a lot of the activity that we've seen in the last year, including the restoration of voting rights for people who were formerly incarcerated or had a felony offense. So we are pleased to have been one of the leaders in that work, and continue to work on behalf of making America great.
Oh, wow, that's a big agenda.
Thank you, Susan.
Yeah. Now, I have a question before you leave us about the governor's task force that you were on. Do you feel that they're going to be working on the things that you suggested?
So that task force was chaired by our lieutenant governor. And again, it was appointed by the governor at our Iowa Summit on Justice and Disparities. We undertook that process with every intention that there would be legislation in proposed during this session. So yes, I do believe that. I know that we are actively working directly with the governor's office on making that legislation as strong as it can be in terms of making sure it meets those recommendations, which were really studied. We brought in a ton of experts and really took a strong look at unbiased policing. So we do expect that legislation would come through. We're also concerned that about the possible coupling of it with other legislation. So we're looking at it, and we're working with the governor's office on it right now. And we're obviously, we're also not afraid to work independently. So we've got a few things in the fire.
Well, thank you very much. And would you stick around for a few minutes? Our second guest,
certainly,
Laura Bellin, may have some questions for you also. But before that, we have a music break. Mike, are you ready? That music break was Fun Day by Stevie Wonder from the Spike Lee movie Jungle Fever. And I played that really to honor Black History Month and also to let you know about a show that airs on Thursday afternoon. This is from that show, and Mike Murphy is the host. It's called You Name It, and it's actually a call-in. Have you had very much luck with call-ins, Mike?
Well, so we did 1971 and 1981, and yes, we had calls for both shows, but more for the 71 show.
Well, and this is 91 tomorrow, right?
Correct. 1991, 30 years ago.
Just a heads up to let you know that You Name It is a celebration of a year. As Mike said, they've done 1971 and 1981. Tomorrow's 1991. So what do you remember about 1991? What songs do you remember? And what were you doing then? So why don't you call in and tell us about it and meet some other people who have memories too. The time is Thursday, January 28th, from 2 to 4 p.m.
Sounds like a lot of fun. In case you guys just tuned in, Betty Andrews just introduced us to a new monthly feature dealing with the issues from the regional NAACP chapters. She was making us aware of the legislative issues affecting African Americans.
Our next guest is Laura Bellin, who is KHOI's legislative reporter. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me back.
We're really glad you can be here to fill us in on the two amendments that are already rolling for the Iowa Constitution on abortion and gun laws.
Quickly, before I jump to that, I just want to pick up on what Betty Andrews was saying, and I want to emphasize to your listeners that even if you're white like I am, we all have an interest in Iowa in racial equity. We all have an interest in reducing the disparities in the criminal justice system. We shouldn't be spending money to lock up people for a kind of nonviolent crime that many white people would never even be charged with, let alone sentenced to prison for. And we shouldn't, and just even if you don't think about the ethical and moral dimension of it, the cities of Waterloo and Des Moines have made huge payouts in lawsuits related to excessive use of police force, racial profiling. And so we all have an interest in solving these problems. And I really appreciate the work of the Iowa-Nebraska Conference of the NAACP to address these problems and really keep the policymakers in the state focused on them.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Well, one of the things that I wondered was one of the reasons that return to voting rights for the recently incarcerated or the ever incarcerated was that they were going to approach it with a constitutional amendment. Mm-hmm. And now, is that one of the constitutional amendments that they've considered this year?
No, that seems to be off the table now that the governor has signed an executive order. The constitutional amendment process in Iowa is really long and difficult compared to in a lot of states. People can get an initiative on the ballot and it passes, and then right away it's added to the Constitution. And the framers of Iowa's Constitution made it very difficult. So two separately elected legislatures have to pass the same language. So in two different legislatures, and then it goes to the voters. It goes on a statewide ballot, and it has to be approved by a majority of voters. And so it takes at minimum 3 years for this process to work its way through. And it's often difficult to get the chambers to agree on language. And then sometimes what one legislature passes, the next elected legislature doesn't want to pass. So we really don't have very many constitutional amendments compared to a lot of states. But as you mentioned, the ones on abortion and guns are rolling now. They are both eligible for debate in the Iowa House. In fact, they could be brought to the floor as early as tonight. The Iowa Senate seems to be moving more quickly on the education bills that Betty was discussing, but we are, I'm sure, within the next week or two going to see these bills debated on the floor of the Iowa Senate as well. So I'm going to take the one about guns first, because that is the closest to getting on a ballot that Iowans would have a chance to vote on. So the idea, Iowa does not have any approximation of the Second Amendment in our state constitution. And Republicans have been trying to get language that would say, you know, it not just that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, but go further than that and say any restrictions on that right shall be subject to strict scrutiny. Strict scrutiny means that when courts consider any limits on gun ownership or possession, that they would have to, the government would have a very high bar to clear. They would have to show that there is a compelling state interest in that policy. And that's very different from how courts look at most government actions, like, you know, let's say like a speed limit or something like that, a seatbelt law. The government only has to show that they had some rational basis for passing that law that limits your activity. But if this constitutional amendment passes, it means that any restriction on guns in Iowa would be subject to strict scrutiny. And that has the Democrats very worried, and a lot of people worried, that our current gun laws, so concealed carry permit rules, background check rules, that any of those could be threatened if this amendment gets added to the Constitution. And in fact, every time this has come up for debate in the Iowa House and Senate, Democrats have offered an amendment that would just copy the language of the federal Constitution's Second Amendment and just say the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed without adding the additional language about strict scrutiny. And Republicans have voted that down every time. So where we're probably headed is the Iowa House and Senate approving this amendment again. They've already passed it in the previous legislature. And if they pass it again this year, then it will go on the statewide ballot in 2022. Do you have any questions about that before I go on to talk about the abortion amendment?
I don't have any. Anybody else? Okay.
So the abortion amendment is earlier in the process. This is something that it passed the Iowa Senate last year, but they didn't have the votes. The Republicans couldn't find 51 votes for it in the Iowa House. So they are back to square one on that. They would have to pass this amendment in this legislature. And then after the 2022 elections, they would have to pass identical language again in the next legislature in order to get it on a statewide ballot in 2024. So the earliest this could be approved by Iowa voters or rejected by Iowa voters, whatever the case may be, would be 2024. But the gist of it is that it says that the Iowa Constitution does not protect any right to an abortion or any funding for an abortion. And this is an attempt by the legislature to overturn a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court ruling in which five justices held that the state constitution does protect a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy. And a lot of people question whether that ruling would even be upheld now, because four of the five justices who participated in that ruling no longer serve on the Supreme Court. And the fifth is about to hit the mandatory retirement age in 2022. So if the same case reached the Iowa Supreme Court today, I think it's very likely that the court would reach a different conclusion. But the Iowa Republican legislators don't want to roll the dice on that. And what they want is to pass this amendment so that the Iowa Supreme Court would not be able to say that there is any constitutional right in the state of Iowa to an abortion. And if this amendment passes, then a future legislature could pass either a total abortion ban or a very severe ban, something like what they tried to pass in 2018 that was called the heartbeat bill, that basically banned all abortions after the point where a fetal heartbeat could be detected. So this amendment itself does not directly ban abortion, but if it passed, it would clear the path for future abortion bans, which the Republican legislators and Republican governor have already indicated that they support.
Well, you said something to me when I was asking you what you wanted to talk about, that both of these would be very difficult to pass on the ballot, mm-hmm. that you thought that was the case.
I think so. I think that a straightforward Second Amendment language that didn't include the strict scrutiny, I think, would be easy to pass. But I believe that adding the strict scrutiny language, I think there will be a very expensive and spirited campaign on both sides. But I think that the support for current law on background checks and concealed carry permits is very high. I've seen polling that shows that more than 80% of people support universal background checks, and that includes a vast majority of people who own guns themselves. So I think that there's a real risk that when that gets to a statewide ballot, that voters wouldn't approve it. And as for the abortion constitutional amendment, the Des Moines Register, the most recent polling I saw on this was from March of 2020. the Des Moines Register included some questions about that in their Iowa poll. And they found that the state was fairly evenly divided on whether abortion should be mostly legal or mostly illegal. That was like a 46% said a mostly illegal and 48% said mostly legal. But it was much more clear when people were asked, should there be language added to the Constitution about abortion? And that was more clear. About 54% said that it should not be added to the Constitution, and only 30-some% said that it should be. So I think that that could be an uphill battle. Now, of course, again, you have to consider the election context. The gun amendment is going to be on a ballot in 2022, which is a midterm election year. Often the structure of the electorate favors Republicans in a midterm election year. 2024, of course, is way too early to predict what that's going to be like. Generally, turnout is much higher in a presidential election year. That's the soonest an abortion amendment could be on a ballot. And with higher turnout in a presidential election year among young people, among independents, I think that would make it even more difficult for Republicans to get Iowa voters to be on board with this, the amendment that would clear the path to banning abortion in the future in Iowa. But we'll have to see how it plays out. But I think that it's possible Republicans are overplaying their hand a little bit and getting ahead of where the Iowa population is on both of these issues.
Are there any questions that you'd like to ask, Betty?
I'm just sitting here listening and, you know, understanding the amendment process. And of course, when we were working on an amendment for the restoration of rights for those with felony convictions, we understood that process to be quite long and, you know, a pretty intense process. So understanding that there probably, you know, will be, depending on how it even gets passed in the House, I mean, I know Laura said 3, and I think it could go all the way up to 4 or 5 years in terms of the length of time it takes. So these are things that we will be watching. So we're you know, not at the point where we have questions right now. We're just kind of watching to see what happens. So
I wanted to add that I mentioned that this abortion constitutional amendment didn't pass last year. That was when Republicans had 53 votes in the Iowa House and Democrats had 47 votes. Now, after the 2020 election, Republicans have 59 in the Iowa House and Democrats have 41. So that's why they're able to come back to this issue, that even if a few of their members don't support this amendment, they almost certainly can easily pass that 51 threshold for getting this through the Iowa House. And of course, it already passed the Iowa Senate last year, so they should have no trouble passing it again in the Iowa Senate this year.
I guess that if there aren't any more legislative questions, that we'll have to say goodbye to both of you. And thank you so much for being with us. This has been extremely enlightening. And hope to see you both again.
Thank you. I look forward to coming back.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Stay warm.
Bye-bye, everybody.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City Ames, and Local Talks host Susan Franzen and I, Gina McAndrews, have been speaking with Laura Bellin, KHOI's legislative reporter, about some of the things that we need to understand regarding the constitutional amendments being proposed by the Republican legislature this year. This is the time to remind our listeners that the views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
One of the things that's been noted several times in different programs on KHOI about the legislature is the fact of the lack of mask regulations at the hearings this year have severely handicapped those concerned about their health in lobbying or, in the case of Democratic members of committees, being present to vote. Many of the committee hearings are being live streamed to anyone who wants to hear them, but liberal lobbyists, as Democrats as well, are inhibited by the lack of masks from attending the hearings. In order to restore some balance, we are presenting selections from the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, which is a political group, but not a partisan group. First, Adam Mason has some very practical suggestions for citizens to lobby their local representatives and senators.
Now, what we've seen so far is a lot of bills. Usually in the first 2 weeks of the session, they go through their speeches in the first week. They do initial committee meetings. This year, they seem to be moving at a much faster clip. In just the first 2 weeks, we've seen 494 bills introduced between the both chambers so far. That's over double what we normally see. We might see about 2,000 legislative bills in a normal session. Right now, we're on pace for over 3,000. So what that tells me is that they've really got their burners set to high up at the Capitol. They want to move and cook quick and really kind of run through as quickly as they can. We do have some legislative timelines. The first funnel, when a bill must pass out of committee, is on March 5th. The second funnel, when a bill must pass at least one chamber and a committee in the opposing chamber, is April 2nd. And they're scheduled to end the session by April 30th. So that's kind of the timeline we're looking at. You know, here at CCI, we're not pie in the sky. We're going into this legislative session with realistic expectations. We know that with complete Republican control, a lot of our priorities we're going to be fighting for tooth and nail to get a hearing on. And what we are actually seeing in terms of policies at the Capitol tells us as much as what we're not seeing. Initial bills from the Republican Party include three different versions of the death penalty, multiple bills addressing abortion, lots of bills, including a constitutional amendment on guns. Now, this is a lot of red meat for their base, right? This is what we always hear out of the right. You know, talk about guns, abortion, and death penalty. We've also seen lots of bills on education, which is a big priority this legislative session. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. We're seeing these from both sides of the aisle right now, but there's a definite push, including the governor, to use public money to fund private schools through what they're calling choice vouchers. Now, we know that this is nothing more than an attempt to strip away local control from our public school systems. And if this is an issue that's important to you, I'd encourage you to get in touch with any number of parents groups that are weighing in on this. And of course, the teachers union, who we rely on for good information. A couple other examples of some bad bills that we're tracking. Just this week, we saw a bill that was introduced to do their cooking. They need food stamps and SNAP and other safety net policies that we support. A bill was introduced this week to root out fraud through the food stamp program. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think there's probably a lot of fraud going on there. And if folks need those safety net programs, maybe we should be focused on providing a living wage and health care for all instead of trying to give them a criminal record. That's just me. We've also seen a recurring bill that we see every year, a bill called E-Verify to crack down on what's perceived as undocumented folks. But again, these kind of punitive policies are not what we want at CCI. We believe Iowa should be a welcoming place. And we've seen lots of bills about policing in the wake of the struggle for racial justice and in response to police violence that we've seen in the last year. We knew that this would be a big issue, but what we're seeing from the right is not the kind of reforms that we need. One other quick heads up is that we know that this year is a redistricting year for Iowa, as it is for every state across the country. And of course, Iowa has the best recipe for redistricting. It's nonpartisan. Legislators can vote up or down on the proposals that a nonpartisan committee puts together. We try not to break up counties for our rural areas. And we don't draw those funny looking districts that look like a messed up chili pepper. As much as possible, we try and follow straight borders. Because of the delay in the census this year, it's likely that Republicans will have to convene a special session this summer to approve Iowa's redistricting plan. We're going to keep our eye on that because whenever they have to do that, something smells kind of fishy. A lot about what we've seen so far. I'm going to pivot for a second to tell you about what we want. You know, what are the ingredients that make up the social justice recipe that we're fighting for at CCI? You might have already seen it. But on the first and second day of the legislative session, when Governor Kim Reynolds gave her legislative her condition of the state address, we issued our plan for $1 billion pandemic relief fund. That sounds like a lot. That's a lot of cheddar, right? Sounds like it. But actually, it's exactly what our communities need. It includes free COVID testing for all Iowans and rapid vaccination programs. It includes increased funding for our public schools, right? Not a tax and not funneling money out of our public schools, actually increasing funding for our public schools. means increasing the minimum wage to $15 an hour for workers. It means increasing food assistance and child care assistance for those who are struggling to get by in these tough times. It means making sure that everyone has a roof over their head and preventing foreclosures. It means that we want parity and strong supports for rural Iowans who are out there struggling to make ends meet. It means that we need to ban racial profiling so that folks aren't having to deal with cash bail or no-knock warrants by police. And of course, it means that our local law enforcement cannot continue serving as ICE. Now, like I said, $1 billion, that's a lot of cheddar, right? But we know where the money is, and it is in corporate tax loopholes. Just by ending the corporate tax breaks and subsidies that our state continues to hand out as part of their business as usual plans, that's $500 million a year right there. Legalizing marijuana would bring in over $100 million in new tax revenue. And of course, if we look at the state's reserves and last year's surplus of over $300 million, we know that we have the money to invest in these. So that gets us to our other priorities at Iowa CCI. In terms of what our priorities were, I laid out our $1 billion relief plan. Of course, what that means is that we've got a lot of work to do. We know that we are going to have to turn the heat up on a lot of these legislators just to get a subcommittee hearing on our priorities. Fortunately, our allies have been introducing our bills. And if you sign up for our emails, you'll get an email from us every Monday with a bill tracker. Of those 500 bills I mentioned that have been introduced so far, we flagged about 100 that we are tracking and about 40 that we are tracking very, very closely. Every Monday, we'll send you an email with a bill tracker, including actions that you can take. And that means emailing your legislator in support of good bills we've already seen for Medicare for All and unprivatizing Medicaid servicing here in Iowa. We're building support and lining up co-sponsors. You can email your legislator in support of the factory farm moratorium bill that will be introduced in early February during part of our week of action then. And of course, there's lots of opportunity. We're seeing more action at the federal level, but we've seen some great bills here in Iowa to make sure that more Iowans are voting and that our elections are accessible to all people. You know, we truly believe that every voter counts and every vote should be counted. So there's lots of great policies like automatic voter registration that we're supporting, as well as expanding the period when folks can get absentee ballots. So where we're going to end up right now is, we've got a lot of work to do. And on one of those issues specifically, you heard me mention policing and racial justice issues. Now, we are working with a number of legislators to make sure that the ban on racial profiling that has been started here in the city of Des Moines is extended to all of our state's communities. We need a statewide ban on racial profiling. The first bill on that was introduced this week. Last week, we saw a bill to mandate body cameras for all law enforcement officers around the state. And we know that another bill to ban racial profiling is coming as well. But you also heard me mention that there's been a lot of bills to protect police, specifically to prevent local law enforcement agencies from firing or cracking down on officers that are involved in police violence. Those are what we're going to be watching and kind of fighting against as we fight for these this ban on racial profiling that we need. We're going to dig in on this a lot more next week when a CCI member who's been fighting on this issue for over 4 years joins us, and we'll see what we're cooking up next week. But she'll join me to kind of dig in on these racial justice issues and help us kind of sniff out what's good and what's bad about all of the different policing racial justice action that we're seeing at the State House. So, again, I'm asking you to share this with your friends. We want to reach more people as we discuss what's cooking at the Capitol. I want you to sign up if you're not already getting CCI Action updates. I'm asking you to sign up for our emails at CCI Action so you can get our weekly update with that awesome bill tracker. It'll highlight key committee hearings that you might want to tune in for. It will give you action steps that you can take when your email or your call can have a really big impact to move this Planet People and Planet First agenda forward.
Adam mentioned the $1 billion relief lobby day at the Iowa State Capitol, which was held at the time of Governor Reynolds' condition of the state report. It was designed for live stream instead of the customary ICTI lobby day when hundreds of members of the organization used to come to the Capitol to directly meet with their legislators to lobby, meanwhile gathering in the rotunda to shout, "This is what democracy looks like." Well, it doesn't look or sound like that in 2021, but it still asks the legislators to pay attention.
We're about to go live at the State House for Iowa CCI Action Fund's $1 billion relief lobby day.
Good morning, Iowa. It's great to be here with you today in the State House Rotunda. My name is Sheree Ortiz, and I am board president of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement Action Fund. Today, the condition of everyday Iowans is the worst it has been in generations, the result of longstanding economic, environmental, and societal problems accelerated by the global COVID-19 pandemic. The weight and burden of unnecessary suffering and death from COVID in families across our state is unprecedented. And all those factors have been made worse by the willful recklessness and incompetent leadership of Governor Reynolds in a federal government that has prioritized corporate profits over the welfare of essential workers, immigrants, the sick, and our elderly family members. Our nursing homes in Iowa are just one tragic example of the failure of this state administration to finance and provide oversight and real authority to officials to carry out directives that ensure workers are properly equipped and safe, and every resident in a nursing home is well cared for. But instead, many have become sick, and far too many have died. My mother passed on April 4th, 2020, from COVID-related circumstances that could have been avoided, even with the lockdown in nursing homes. But state standards allow low staffing numbers, and the lockdown made it impossible for staff to meet the needs of every resident. Corporate ownership of the nursing homes places profits before care, and this governor supports that. Our recovery as a state has been hamstrung by a governor that refuses to mitigate the spread of COVID with clear mandates and directives to control contagion. Instead, we all know people who are sick or trying to recover, many suffering from the long-term consequences of infection or have died. Economic recovery will not and cannot be achieved with so many people afraid to go outside. Willfully ignoring our needs for transparency and compassion has left us carrying the burden of ongoing sadness and hardship. Many workers are living paycheck to paycheck because of low wages and hours cut. More than 500,000 Iowans have filed for unemployment. More and more Iowans depend on food banks for food necessities. Governor Reynolds' failed leadership is clear. Reynolds ended the reporting of workplace COVID outbreaks soon after big outbreaks at meat processing plants left many workers sick. She shielded giant grocers, meat packers, and other corporations from liability at the expense of factory workers, consumers, and the elderly living in care centers. She now refuses to request or take White House task force reports on Iowa in an attempt to hide our dire circumstances when compared to other states. These federal reports often urge stronger action to mitigate spread. There is no transparency in how Iowa reports COVID data. Independent data analysis shows much higher levels of contagion in our counties than what is reported by the Iowa Department of Health. Reynolds has taken away school districts' local control to decide when to go virtually online without a state waiver. And now our schools have become victims of COVID spread, with class sizes becoming too big because there aren't enough substitutes. Teachers are getting sick, and some have died. Reynolds also used CARES Act money for her own personal projects and political paybacks instead of using it for its intended purpose, to mitigate spread of COVID and directly help all the families that they need. Folks, it doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
There is aim to recovery.
Yes.
There is a path for stability. There is a path for healthy neighborhoods and communities and towns across the state. With the right kind of leadership, strategies, and allocation of funds, Iowa can once again be a place to be proud of.
Thank you for joining us for this discussion of potential legislation at the Iowa State Capitol, both with the legislature and including a sound bite from a virtual lobby day. There are a lot of things that are different this year. One of them was the presidential inauguration that took place just a week ago, with flags where there'd normally have been crowds, just 2 weeks after a mob invaded the Capitol, intent on stopping the counting of the ballots of the Electoral College. With that as background, listening to the Star-Spangled Banner at the inauguration was a different experience than any of the other hundreds of times we have heard it.
Ladies and gentlemen, here for the singing of our national anthem, accompanied by the President's own United States Marine Band, please welcome Lady Gaga.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and your hosts for today have been Gina McAndrews and Susan Franzen. You've been listening to Local Talk, a program about the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Remember that you can also hear the program online at khoifm.org and find the links to the guests and information you heard during the program today. Also, Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 o'clock p.m. this evening.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Other voices you heard were Betty Andrews, Laura Bellin, Adam Mason, and various members of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. Our theme is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Have a Good Day by Stevie Wonder from the soundtrack of Jungle Fever. And The Star-Spangled Banner performed by Lady Gaga and the President's Own U.S. Marine Band at the inauguration of President Joseph Robinette Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris on January 20th, 2021. And tomorrow afternoon on Thursday, go to You Name It from 2 to 4 on KHOI.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, please contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member, or you can renew your membership today. Just hit the yellow Donate, Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends. And remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.